This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Yesterday, Peter McKay joined the conservative leadership race, and I think that means it has now begun in earnest. McKay, of course, is the founder of the party. He merged his progressive conservatives with Stephen Harper's alliance, and subsequently he served in the portfolios of foreign affairs, justice, and defense under Harper. So obviously he's had a lot of experience. Marilyn Gladue is the only other declared candidate. The other names bandied about as likely contenders are former Quebec Premier Jean Charest, former cabinet ministers Pierre Poilievre and Erin O'Toole. Yesterday, there was a report that Rona Ambrose, another former cabinet minister, will not run. And again, we have yet to hear from the woman herself. So where does this leave the field and the party? I'd like to hear from you. Do you have a favorite? Do you think this sets them up well for the next election? The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. Right now, I would like to welcome Alim Kanji, Vice President of Government Relations at Sutherland, and Ashton Arsenault in Ottawa. He is with Crestview Strategy. Hello and welcome to you both.
Hello, Libby.
Okay, am I hearing an echo somewhere? Okay, it's just background noise. Hi, Alim.
Hey, good afternoon, Libby.
Ashton, maybe you could find a slightly quieter place. Alim, what do you think it means that McKay is in?
Well, let's set the context here first, Libby, if we can. We look back to the last federal election, and you see the Conservative Party of Canada, under the leadership of Andrew Scheer, receiving the most votes. They won the popular vote. A lot of people forget that, just like Hillary Clinton did in the United States. And of course, she's not president. Another interesting facet around that is that it actually was the second highest vote total for any Conservative Party leader, trailing that of just Brian Mulroney back in 1984, in what was obviously a very historic landslide back then, if many of our listeners remember. Does Peter McKay entering the race right now represent that middle brand, that middle of the road candidate that they need? This is going to be a very controlled campaign. The price of entry is $300,000 and 3,000 signatures, which I don't think is going to be a problem for the serious candidates. And they're going to need that all by the 25th of March for the June 27th convention of who they decide the leader will be. So, you know, Peter McKay, of course, spent a lot of time in politics. He has done his bid on Bay Street as well. Respected within the party. Can he build a bigger tent? Can he navigate around, you know, those so-called social conservative issues that many believe did the conservatives in this last election? So well, there are a lot of considerations there to see if he can actually do that, build a big tent. I suspect we'll have our friend John Capbianco working on Peter McKay's campaign.
We have Michael Diamond is going to be working on his campaign.
Well, there you go. Another friendly conservative as well. And of course, the campaign and the race itself is going to be chaired by Lisa Raitt, former deputy leader, former cabinet minister in the Harper years, a very well-known conservative who I think is going to add discipline and rigor to this race to keep those that are serious from participating and leaving those that are not on the sidelines. So I keep an eye on Lisa Raitt and Dan Nolan as well as the co-chairs of the campaign.
Arshton, do you agree that a lot of this hinges on making sure that the person is kind of middle of the road and is not a social conservative?
Well, I think that's ultimately a question for the membership, frankly. People will have general opinions about the electability in a general election about one candidate or another. But as the other guest likely will agree, leaderships are a far different animal and entirely different set of circumstances. Look, I am quite satisfied that Peter McKay has decided to hop into the race. I think the timing was right. I think he has been biding his time considerably now for a while. And all of the signals sort of led towards this. And by all accounts, he's going to have a really professional team attempting to help him get this done. I'm looking at the electoral map now. And when I say the map, I mean sort of Conservative Party memberships, because we do have sort of a unique way of electing our leaders, which goes all the way back to the merger, right?
So. And all there are people who think that will sink you. The system that you use, you will end up invariably with a second choice. But go ahead.
Yeah. Look, there has been a lot of criticism leveled at how the Conservative Party elects its leaders over the last number of years, and there's some pretty intense opinion on that, and generally it does come up for review at conventions, but it's survived this long and very likely will survive again into the future. But if I'm looking at a map right now, you sort of hit the nail on the head, Libby. Peter is sort of this middle of the road, or at least understood to be a middle of the road conservative, if not leaning slightly towards the red Tory wing of the party. How is that going to stack up against people like, let's say, Pierre Poilievre, who has very established sort of conservative bona fides across the country and is certainly more vocal about the principles of conservatism and where he views that with respect to the party? So I think it's going to be a tough road to climb for Peter McKay. It's certainly not going to be a shoe-in contest for him, and he knows that. And I'm sure that people like Michael Diamond will drill that into him too. He's got to put in the work. He's got to sign up members. He needs to fundraise, and he's going to have to do an awful lot of touring across the country because, as publicly relevant as Peter McKay is right now, there are still areas of the country that may or may not have an opinion of him that is not going to be particularly helpful to him in this race. So he's going to have to do a lot of traveling around and a lot of handshaking over the next 4 months.
Now, do you agree that this whole issue of, on the one hand, in the general population, probably social conservatism is not a winning thing, but a lot of members of the Conservative Party are, and they're the ones who get to vote for the leader, Aleem.
There's no question. These so-called, SOCONs, they're a very important part of the Conservative base. Let's not forget, these are folks that might have entrenched opinions around abortion, around sex ed, around issues like cannabis. But the fact of the matter is they show up, they organize, they donate, and they have the ear of the party. And so that will have to be looked at and navigated around very, very carefully. Whether your name is Pierre Poilievre or even somebody like Aaron O'Toole, here's a couple of Ontario guys that we'll have to make sure, I think, as was pointed out earlier, that they expand well beyond their base of Ontario. We have Western alienation, talk of Wexit, all of this stuff happening out, with our friends in Calgary and Edmonton and in Western Canada. How do potential leaders reach out to folks in Western Canada, from places like Vancouver to Calgary and Edmonton? It is going to be important to make sure that part of the country is seen. And I think even more so for someone like Peter McKay, who has roots in Eastern Canada, of course, the Nova Scotia guy himself, but he'll have to reach out. And I wouldn't dismiss Western Canada out of this and the fundamental issues that they face. I was just out in Calgary recently, and I'll tell you, they're hurting out there. They got a 35% office vacancy rate. Sitting here in downtown Toronto, Libby, we're at probably just under 3%. You know, that means one out of every three offices are vacant. They are struggling. They are hurting. They are an oil and gas economy, as we all know, and they need to expand around that. What are the thoughts of those leaders around this in helping our friends in Western Canada? That remains to be seen and articulated by the potential leader.
Okay, I'd like to bring in conservative strategist Andrew Brander. And Andrew, still with this whole question about social conservatives and whether they're electable, the fact is that Peter McKay voted against same-sex marriage and again voted against reopening it, yet he seems to have this rap as somebody who is not socially conservative. So, you know, what about all that?
Yeah, I think Libby, in large part, that comes with the advantages of sort of being associated with the former iteration of the Progressive Conservative Party, and a softer conservatism, if you will. The question that his candidacy will actually venture to answer in this leadership race is whether brand of conservatism is still relevant in this iteration of the Conservative Party. As you and your other guests have already been discussing, this is obviously just the third leader in the history of the Conservative Party in its current iteration, and you know, Peter McKay is going to be relying very heavily on the former organizers who were part of that previous legacy party that he led, and I think a lot of those questions are going to be answered. Are these people still around? Are they still active organizations that he can leverage into actual real support? But I do think to broadly answer the question, I think a lot of the leadership contenders are going to have to come out and address those votes head on. They have records, as anyone who has been elected previously does. And I think you'll see actually some of them, you know, come out and flat out say that they were wrong in their previous votes. So I think that's something to watch for and create that distance. But obviously Canadians have moved on it too. So I think it's reasonable to expect that our politicians could have evolved as well.
I am going to take a call from Darcy and Lindsay. Hi, Darcy.
Hi, Libby.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, well, I'm going to support Peter McKay. If Rona had run, I probably would have supported Rona, but I'm going to support Peter because I think he's the only one that has the national presence out of the other two main candidates, which I consider to be Pierre and Aaron O'Toole. Forget Charest. He's not on the radar as far as most conservatives are concerned. But Peter's got the national presence. He's got the experience. He's got a little bit of charisma, too, which helps. And I think he's a logical choice, and I think he's the only one, quite frankly, that can beat Justin.
Okay. Aleem wants to talk. So, Aleem, you know, can respond to Darcy first.
This is a great comment by Darcy, and I want to come back to this quote that President Barack Obama used when he talked about U.S. politics. And he once said that, you know, U.S. politics are played between the 40-yard lines. You know, and there's a little sports analogy to say, you know, U.S., the United States of America, for what it's worth, really, people sit within those 40-yard marks. And I would say that in this country, we play between the blue lines, to use the hockey analogy. We really are between the two blue lines. And so, you know, we don't have an electoral college, obviously, in this country.
Thank goodness
we don't. But, you know, I think the only way to win, the only road to victory for the Conservatives is to take votes from the Liberals. They've reached, I think, a ceiling with, you know, social conservatives and, you know, movement conservatives. They're already in. So the new leader is going to have to reach out very, very quickly to those that vote Liberal, you know, those you know, sort of red Tories, you know, women as well. I think are going to be a big part of the base that they're going to have to try to build. Can McKay do this? Possibly. Can Charest do it? I think so. Can Rona Ambrose do it? You know, Rona Watch technically is still on. She hasn't said no.
Let's get to that in a moment. Darcy, thanks for your call. And let's go over to Ottawa and Ashton in Ottawa. Okay, so everybody is saying they were looking at Rona Ambrose as maybe the savior of the party. She performed brilliantly when she was the interim leader. Really kept everything together. She's a woman. She's young. She's got all the bona fides. Now, yesterday there was a report in the press, of all places, saying she was not in. So she hasn't said so herself. I would be waiting to say, wait until she said so herself. I mean, she's got a good thing going in the private sector, though it looks like she'd be the shoo-in. So it's hard to imagine why she wouldn't just, you know, go for it. Ashton, why won't she go for it?
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. I certainly don't think she'd be a shoo-in, if you wanted my honest opinion.
Okay.
But, at the same time, she definitely steered the party more than ably during her interim stint. But the reality is interim stints are an awful lot different than going into a general election as the head of a party. That all having been said, would she have significant support if she were to enter the race? Absolutely. Everybody knows that, and she would immediately be a formidable candidate. But at the same time, for many reasons, just like Peter McKay is going to face, and the other candidates as well, maybe even including Jean Charest, her presence is much more focused out in the West than it is any other place in the country. She certainly has a couple of things going for her right off the bat. She speaks well. She's quite moderate compared to a few of the other candidates. And she's got a female advantage as well in this race, which is certainly going to pay dividends when you're going up against Justin Trudeau. So to answer your question, I don't think she would have been a shoo-in. If I'm Rona Ambrose right now, do I want to get into what is going to be a dogfight and leave what I believe to be a pretty good existence in the private sector? I don't know. It's a tough call.
Andrew Brander, the other thing that I'm not really getting, I get that the candidates are waiting, biding their time for the right moment, but what is with all this cat and mouse stuff, why isn't she just telling us yes or no?
Well, and that's why I think that speaks clear and loud for itself, quite frankly. Whether the report from La Presse is right or wrong, it's frankly irrelevant at this point, in my opinion. I think the lion's share of the organizers have aligned themselves with an individual candidate. Going back to Darcy's call there, I can't help but say I recognize the voice. I think that's one of the provincial riding presidents. But that speaks to the point I was making about Peter McKay's staying power on traditionally progressive voices who have actually donated their time to the party as a riding president. And those are the people that are able to organize. And the fact is, in Darcy's case, he sounds like he's pretty aligned with Peter McKay. And those are the people that these leadership candidates are going to be relying so heavily on. In the last few weeks, I've spoken with many party organizers across the country. Haven't really heard of any of them who have really been reached out to by Ms. Ambrose or a team organizing on her behalf. And those who actually have, whereas some candidates have been getting the call and saying, hey, I am doing this, I am committed to this, and I want you to be part of the team. I'm hearing the calls from people who are seeking support on her behalf are making those calls much more in a, I don't know what I should do, give me some advice. And that's not the kind of leadership that people are looking for.
Okay, so but they're still making calls on her behalf. But I guess those people are going on the fact that she's not organized and she would be.
I don't know if there's a point in actually making an announcement. Also, saying that you're not running. This could be a case where the deadline just comes and passes, and she's, just whatever it is the case.
So there's another thing at play, and it maybe it is the elephant in the room we haven't talked about, but it is out there, and we'll see whether it happens or not. And that is this: my sources are saying that there is a possibility that the job of Canadian ambassador to the United States will be offered to one Rana Ambrose. Now, that is a fascinating job proposition in a minority government that we face liberally with the Liberals, of course, for the next few years, I think we can all agree on, that would isolate her, take her out of the race.
Well, for sure. That for sure.
And give her a pretty plum position. Now, having to work with U.S. President Donald Trump and the rest of the lot, some may disagree, but I think it would be very interesting to have a conservative voice on what we're facing with the United States. A lot of issues centered around the economy, of course, foreign affairs issues. We saw what happened in Iran. We're seeing what's happening in the economy. We get a Western voice in there.
Trudeau Pair had a a very good saying about that, and that is exactly where we're at with sleeping beside an elephant.
And by the way, it would also make for the first time in our history the first female ambassador from this country to the United States. I'm surprised that hasn't happened as yet, quite frankly. And I think she'd make a remarkable ambassador. I think she'd also make a remarkable entry into this race. Rana, if you're listening, the cards are in your hands.
Yeah, we know that. Okay, well, that's a good point, reminding us about that. I'm going to take a call from Sam in Toronto. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Libby. Good morning to you and to your guests. There is one secret weapon that Peter McKay, McKay is a younger generation of conservatives, and I really like the guy.
He's not that young anymore.
don't make me feel old. But I'm saying young is good. It's good. But what I'm saying is that he has a secret weapon that no one is talking about. He has a charismatic, intelligent, famous public speaker, human rights activist, and former Miss World Canada, winner.
His wife just yesterday. I was talking to him just before he announced about Iran.
He's going to bring that, that tag team match, like, Michelle Obama and Obama, which is very absent in Canadian politics.
Some people think Sophie is terrific. So I'm not sure. I'm sure you prefer Nazanin McKay, but...
Well, I'm kind of biased because...
You're kind of biased, yeah. But, that's a good point. But I gather Rana Ambrose has a nice partner, too, as I'm sure the others do.
I'm not putting others down. I'm just giving that's up on this one. And plus, when McKay comes up, then, we're not going to have Justin Trudeau as apologist for Mullah regime in Iran. So that'd be a great, great change.
Okay, Sam. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure that Peter McKay would have the Iranian-Canadian vote sewn up, 300,000 people. Before we turn to provincial politics, Ashton Arsenault, what is going to happen next in this leadership race? Are you expecting official announcements from the other three people that we have talked about, and when should we expect that?
Fair question. I do think that the logical next step is going to be the sort of the official jumping into the ring by a couple of other candidates. By all accounts, Pierre Poilievre is going to run. He's got the team. He's already making calls. There's a significant amount of organization underway. I'd be shocked if that didn't come within the next couple of weeks. Aaron O'Toole, again, he's got the organization. I know he's out doing calls. I saw a couple of fundraising events pop up on my radar, actually in Ottawa. So very likely that he's in soon as well. I would be very surprised if both of these two didn't get in by the end of the month. Then you've got sort of the more wild card characters in Jean Charest. he's got an interesting campaign thus far. He can perform better in Quebec than the other candidates, seems to be his only message thus far. I think he will have an extremely difficult road ahead to claim the leadership. I think a lot of conservatives are scratching their heads wondering if Jean Charest is actually a conservative, but maybe that's a debate for another time.
I'm wondering if Jean Charest is wondering.
So to answer your question, yes, the logical next steps are going to be other candidates getting into the race. And then there's a couple of significant events coming up. I'll just put those on the radar of your listenership. The Manning Conference is coming up. Any candidate that's in the race is going to be at that. There's going to be some leader debates organized, obviously. But leadership, above all else, is ground game. Signing up members, fundraising, that's it.
Okay. Andrew, anything to add to that before we move on to the next topic?
Yeah, I think to Ashton's point there, the rules in large part don't leave a lot of time for candidates to get in. That's why you're seeing these more traditional soft launches that are a way to signal that you're in without obviously the big, confetti cannons and balloon drops and because the rules actually don't allow for candidates to formally start fundraising until they are a registered candidate. Now, they're sort of layered in, which is nice. So you hit different milestones. So it's not like you need $300,000 to enter the race tomorrow, but you do need that amount by, I believe it's the end of March. And therefore, if candidates are in a position where they need to raise, $300,000 in the next 2.5 months, then they've really got to, and they can't start doing that without being officially in the race. Then they have to make themselves known very quickly.
Now, I'm just trying to remember, wasn't it the Doug Ford leadership where the balloon drop didn't work? And that turned out to be a story.
That's correct.
Yes, that's correct. Alim, unless there's anything to add on that, let's pivot to provincial politics.
Oh, yeah, I would just add that the actual deadline is the 27th of February to have your name on registered. So theoretically, if you register by the 27th of February, you then have a month, taking us to the 25th of March, to get those 3,000 signatures and to get your $300,000 in place. So that doesn't give a lot of time, 1 month. So I would agree with Ashton and Andrew. I think we will be hearing by the end of this month, in the next 2 weeks, whether the names we've talked about are officially going to be in or whether they're going to play from the sidelines.
Okay, let's take a call from Michael in Toronto. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, hi. I think Peter McKay would make a good candidate for the leadership of the Conservatives, but I truly believe that Andrew Scheer would have been Prime Minister right now if it hadn't been for the people of Ontario that were voting against Doug Ford and the billions of dollars that we inherited from the previous Liberal Party. And I think people like myself would have, as I did vote conservative, and I am in Ontario. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I don't know about that. I think that a lot of whatever the problem with Andrew Scheer was, is a lot of it was Andrew Scheer. Those things were all happening. There's always something, but I think there was an issue with him.
Yeah, but don't you think that the people of Ontario would have voted conservative if it hadn't, or would have voted conservative hadn't been for Doug Ford and the cutbacks that he made that people were upset about?
But I think they would have voted conservative if there was a candidate that they liked. So, I mean, it's six of one. I'm not a strategist. So thanks for your call, Michael. Thank you.
I'd just say one thing on Michael's call, Libby. The fact is, whether Doug Ford was or was not a factor in the last election, there's only one thing we really do know for sure, and that's that Doug Ford got more votes in Ontario than Justin Trudeau or Andrew Scheer. So, the fact is that was only a year ago. I'm one that believes that not much of that has changed, despite the fact that you were referencing a poll.
I'm about to give the details on it.
So I'll turn it over to you, Liz.
Okay, so a Polara poll, reputable polling company. So it shows that right now the leaderless Liberals, who actually haven't even been getting that much ink or attention or airtime, are ahead of the Conservatives. And this, you know, a little bit of time since the Conservatives have, unleashed their kinder, gentler face to the world. So it shows the leaderless Liberals, led by John Fraser, who we rarely see, at 33%, Doug Ford's Conservatives at 29%, the NDP at 27%, and whoa-ho, Mike Schreiner and the Greens at 9%. So, to me, that does not bode well. I mean, if anything, it just shows that the progressive conservative charm offensive maybe isn't working that well, Alim.
We've got March is around the corner, and in March, we're going to find out who the Liberals pick as their leader. Candidates are already out there. We've got former Transportation Minister Stephen Del Duca,
who apparently has it sewn up.
Well, from an organization perspective and from fundraising, he certainly has an advantage. We know the way these things work. We know how Dalton McGuinty became leader, and it didn't happen on the first ballot years ago. It was, I believe, on the fourth ballot. So, does that, spring hope for folks like Mitzi Hunter or Michael Couto? Again, both former ministers in the Wynn McGuinty years. How will Ontario voters reflect on 15 years of Liberal leadership in terms of bringing in what could be a former McGuinty Wynn stalwart into the picture? It's almost looked at the same way as how will Canadian voters reflect on having a Harper stalwart leading the party. Now, you can make the argument that Peter McKay's been gone for a little bit of time, and Ronna Ambrose, if she decides to enter. But these are things that I think the general public is going to look at. The issue, though, is that this is not a general public race. These are races for leaders, and these races are very distinct and are organized very differently than a general election. But Stephen Del Duca probably has a good shot at winning. How does he debate well on a stage with Doug Ford? I think those poll numbers are going to change when things like that are out, and when we see the attack dog as leader in Queen's Park debate and go after the premier, those numbers will change as time goes on.
Okay. Ashton, what do you think? Do you think that this is just some kind of blimp, or that this is kind of bad news for the Ontario PCs?
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, it's a snapshot in time. Oh boy, how short the memories are in Ontario with respect to the Liberal Party, I guess.
And everything else.
It's pretty easy for the Liberal Party right now because they are sort of being assessed on ideals and values. There's nobody to wear the stench of a decade of failure. And I feel like inevitably, once a leader is installed, and yes, I will agree with both of you, by all accounts, it looks like it's going to be Mr. Del Duca. There will be holes poked in his sheen fairly quickly, and he'll be forced to answer questions with respect to the failures of the past. And I feel like once the rest of the voting population in Ontario gets a sense at what a Liberal solution would be to the current government, the varnish will wear thin quite quickly.
Yeah, I'd add on what Ashton said there. I can say if you look back, I remember being shocked at this myself. But during the whole Ontario PC Patrick Brown kerfuffle and the time between the exit of Patrick Brown and the selection of the new leader, even amongst a very messy leadership where rules were unclear. We had Patrick Brown coming back in and then leaving again. The Ontario PC Party actually had their highest polling numbers during that period. It's because, Libby, people want to see themselves in that party, and therefore, a leaderless party is often the beneficiary of better polling numbers. However, as Ashton said, the party's not going to remain leaderless forever. There was a debate hosted last night here in Toronto of the Ontario leadership, Ontario Liberal leadership candidate, and boy, it looks like a lot of has-beens, and just very, very reminiscent of that that sort of stale, out of date, out of touch ideas and party that we had become so used to. And I can tell you, even in the way that they're selecting their leader, is reminiscent of that. Of course, they're reverting back to a delegated system. So this is going to be up to Liberal elites to be able to make this choice. So it's really up to them to select the leader, and they'll have to lay in whatever bed they set for themselves.
Okay, so. Well, you guys are all conservative strategists, so you think that this is just the result of some kind of vacuum. A lot of the things that you said, interestingly enough, could be said about the conservative race. There all seem to be former Harper people. A lot of people have very bad memories of the Harper government. He was defeated by Justin Trudeau, who was then the leader of the third party, and that was a surprise. So, I think it's interesting. What can I say, Ellie?
And we're not even talking about the opposition. I mean, God bless the NDP, but they just really haven't been around and have not been an effective opposition. And I think that's something that's reflected in the Pallera poll. I mean, they're just not even on the map. I mean, for
27%.
You know, but where has
2% behind the governing party?
Yeah. Fair. I question where, where the opposition is being on a host of issues, be that education or healthcare or other things out of Queen's Park. They really haven't had much of a presence, and it's a golden opportunity for them to take advantage of a government in waiting, really, as the opposition. I can't see that happening. I mean, I think, and of course, there's a long way to go until the next provincial election, but they really haven't defined themselves and have been not as organized as the other two parties.
Okay. I'm looking at the clock. Ashton and Andrew, can you give me something in 10 seconds each, please?
Look, there's going to be a couple more candidates that get into the Conservative Party race. That's inevitable. I think once the first debate happens, I think you'll start to see sort of a clear front runner. But in the way that leaders are chosen in the Conservative Party of Canada, as you saw last time around, it's not over until the final vote's counted.
Okay. Andrew, 10 secs?
Yeah, I'd say interesting race, certainly, to watch at the federal level, what impacts that will have at the provincial level as well. As you alluded to, I think Ford's had a difficult year, but there's lots of time to recover for that, and they are very secure in a majority government, and I'm sure this was all part of a greater plan, knowing that that some of the more difficult decisions should be made up front, so as to see long-term benefits from that.
Okay, thank you so much, Ashton Arsenault, Andrew Brander, and Alim Kanji. Appreciate it very much.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.